If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe. Like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. My guest today is a three-time NBA champion, one of the consummate 3-and-D guys of his era, consummate role player, glue guy, all that good stuff. Danny Green. All that 3 and all that D is on hold for the moment while Danny recovers from a torn ACL. That injury, of course, came in the playoffs with the Sixers last spring. He was traded to the Grizzlies on draft night in the deal for D'Anthony Melton. So he is now in Memphis rehabbing, but also imparting as much veteran wisdom as possible to one of the league's youngest teams, certainly a team that could use all that veteran wisdom. Indeed, might be the best collection of young talent in the NBA. And Danny is while rehabbing and while new to this team, is, as he says, involved in every huddle, every practice. He's still working. He's not in uniform, but the man's still working. We talked about Ja Morant, of course. We talked about Dylan Brooks, who has also become known as Evil Danny Green. He'll explain. We discussed Danny's rehab, his hopes for the season, and, oh yeah, his new side gig with ESPN. Plus, Danny had some really interesting thoughts on his former teammate Ben Simmons. You don't want to miss that. Before we get to all that, my weekly plug, Sports Illustrated and Triumph Books have a great new book out about the Lakers. It's called The Greatest Show on Earth. Features 15 stories from the pages of SI from the 60s through the present, covering all the Laker legends. We're talking Kareem, Magic, Wilt, Elgin, Kobe, Shaq, LeBron, and these are written by some of the greatest sports writers of all time: Frank DeFord, Jack McCallum, Lee Jenkins, Chris Ballard, and many more. I had the honor of writing the introduction for the book, which is now available for pre-order with a 30% discount. Go to triumphbooks.com, search for Greatest Show on Earth. There's also a direct link in the summary of this podcast, or you can type in a bit.ly link. It's bit.ly/Lakers75. When you get to checkout, use the discount code Lakers30. Again, that is at triumphbooks.com, and the discount code is Lakers30. Okay, my conversation with Danny Green is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, very pleased to be joined by a three-time NBA champion, professional podcaster, and now ESPN analyst part-time, Danny Green. How are you, Danny?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for the introduction, man. It's always very weird hearing some of the things on the resume. But the newest one is even weirder. But yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm excited. I think it's going to be a fun time. And, you know, learning, getting back to podcasting, learning my teammates, learning the city of Memphis. And, you know, talking some sports when I have some off time.
You got a lot going on, per usual. And the resume keeps growing. So that's a fun thing to see.
Hopefully, man. That's the goal. You know, to keep growing.
When is the ESPN debut?
That is a good question. We are figuring that out in terms of schedule-wise because, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen when the trade happened in terms of how the team wanted me around in my rehab because I was doing a lot of my rehab in L.A., yeah. But once the trade happened, they were like, you know, first they were trying to see what was going on, see what other free agency pieces are moving around. Then once things settled, they were like, you know, we really want you. You're what we need. And we want you around the team as much as possible. We want you in every huddle. So it's tough given the fact that, you know, I'm going to be in every huddle. So we have to do on off days or days that we don't play.
Yeah.
We have to find a studio. I don't know how many great studios are here in Memphis, but we'll find some in other cities here. And then, you know, figure out a perfect date to do the debut.
Very cool. I was thinking about this. So Draymond Green, of course, has his gig with Turner. So he's active in doing this. I think you guys are the only two who have like active careers and, you know, major side gigs with the broadcast partners of the league. Like, how big of a pitfall do you think that is for you or could be for you? I mean, you've had the podcast for years already, so you're kind of you're already in this space, but ESPN, a bigger platform, and whatever you say, especially if it's critical of anybody, you know, is going viral in like 2.3 seconds. So
for sure.
Any concerns about how you navigate that? And do you, you know, watch how Draymond does it to kind of get any cues? Although Draymond may not be the best role model on that because he's completely unfiltered. So
yeah, he's a little different than I. I'm not too concerned about it. I've been doing it. I said I've been able to get some reps over the last couple of years with the podcast. But yeah, you know, I know I have to do the job, and that's part of the job is criticizing. I know I'm biased when it comes to players and obviously players that I've played with. But, you know, I when it comes down to it, I will make the correct assessments or my opinions and give my criticisms. But yeah, I'm not as, I guess, outspoken or looking for hot takes or as unfiltered as others. But I did not know he's still with Turner. He's still, I thought it was just a brief temporary thing for the time that he was hurt. But yeah, I think we are the only two that are, and mine really is just to get reps up. Mine is to just get more of a feel for it. So when the time, I'm just preparing for, obviously I hope once I get back that I still have a couple of years before it's all said and done, but preparing for life after basketball and just kind of get reps up. But, yeah, you know, I like what JJ has done this past year. I like what CJ when he got on. You know, those guys are guys that kind of the lean categories of how they express opinions, how they break down the game and kind of, you know, respect the game at the same time, respect the players of the game at the same time. That's kind of the realm that I'm trying to be in.
Yeah. We'll get to some of the other stuff about the rehab and the season and everything, but just while we're on the topic of broadcasting and it being a second career in that, you're obviously preparing, moving toward that. You're 35 now, you'll be 36 in June. Not to bring up just the you know, I mean, listen, that's the age at which a lot of guys start to, you know, move out,
for
right?
Sure.
That is you're in that key zone, and guys play longer these days, so you could be longer. But do you have a sense in mind about how much longer it will be before you transition strictly to the broadcast?
Oh man, I mean, I get access quite a bit. I think I have at least, you know, this year. I wouldn't say I'm old, but I know that I'm getting older. I know it takes longer for the body to heal. I know that I shouldn't be playing 30 plus minutes a night if I want to be fresh for playoffs or, you know, fresh for the next game. But for me, I think I still have, you know, at least after this year. I mean, I do plan on coming back this year And I do have a goal, and we're on a pretty good pace. I don't want to jinx it. I don't like to speak about it, but we're on a pretty good pace at reaching that goal. And after this year, I think I got at least, you know, two more good years of playing at a high level. And then maybe it depends on – we'll usually take it year by year. We'll see how the body's doing, if it's dwindling down or not, if it's still up. But I would like to think, you know, playing at a pretty good high level, given some really good minutes to this organization or another if I'm not here next year. And then, you know, after that, you know, seeing where the body is, where the body goes, and you know, maybe, you know, do a coaching year or two, or not coaching, but like a player coach type of year or two, be on the sideline and help, you know, mentor and help a team mature, which I'm kind of doing now. Maybe another year or two of that. So who knows? I would think at least, you know, 3 or 4 years at the minimum, probably at least 3 years, 4 years, maybe more, maybe a year or two more where, you know, it could be a little Udonis, you know, here and there.
I don't think Udonis is ever retiring. I think like 20 years from now, Riley's still going to be president. Spo will still be coach, and Udonis will still be the 15th man.
Yeah, at this point, it's like, man, I guess I think he wanted to. I guess they had sent somebody to his house to, like, you know, get him to come back, or this. I don't know. I heard many different stories, but, you know, good for him to keep it going. You know, he's still in good shape. He's still able to teach, still able to coach. He's still able to, you know, get in practice and do his job and travel with the team. And he has an impact, even though he doesn't play a ton of minutes or play much minutes at all. But he is an impact for that group and in that organization.
I think you got a couple things going in your favor, Danny. Like, I feel like it's the cerebral players, of which you check that box, who I think are able to extend longer because you're not over-reliant on athleticism. And then also because not over-reliant on, I think, like, the guys who are, you know, really explosive, speedy, whatever, at some point that stuff goes. And if that's all you could hang your hat on for a career, then, you know, your usefulness runs out a lot sooner. So, like, you're a guy, not to knock your athleticism, but you're not somebody who, you know, won your spot in this league and had a long career based on leaping over dudes, right?
So yeah, I take it as a compliment, man. No worries. Me being unathletic and being able to still be in this league, I think is a good thing. And so I think it's helped me a ton with that, you know, being so and be able to have the longevity, because I think, like you said, a lot of those guys are athletics. They rely on that and they don't really have to, you know, break down or understand the game as deeper or have to rely on the IQ of the game. And you know, have to make adjustments. Once the athleticism goes, you have to be able to adjust and either make shots or be able to be smart defensively and cut people off and knowing your personnel. So I think that's just the hardest adjustment for those guys. But for me, it was easy because I never was a 45-inch leaper in most of my career. So and I think that's also a blessing of, you know, being one of the fourth, fifth options in college, you know, coming off the bench in college, coming off the bench most of my career and figuring out. I think that's helped me a ton understanding, because I think a lot of those guys has given so much early, usually ones that peak earlier or just, I would say, become satisfied earlier. And then they don't kind of continue to work on their game. I've been given that chip. You know, it's a gift and a curse, but I've been given that motivation year in, year out from the critics and people that always doubt me. And so I try to improve myself to be better, you know, the following year.
You alluded to this, Danny, but where, to the extent that you can or are comfortable talking about it, like, where do things stand in terms of the rehab, the return, ACLs? You know, we know it can take 10 months to a year just to get back on the court. And then I know it actually takes longer than that. Like, it's really more like, you know, 18 months to 2 years before guys are themselves again, especially guys who relied a lot more on their athleticism. I mean, maybe you can get back sooner than that. And every ACL is different. Every surgery is different, all that stuff. But you did it in the playoffs. So the normal thing would be like, well, maybe you're not back until April, May. And of course the Grizzlies, you know, could be making a deep run. Maybe that buys you extra time, but do you have a goal of getting back before you even get to the postseason?
I do. I would love to be back as soon as possible. I would love to build a rhythm with this group. I would love to understand, you know, the spacing, the floor, the chemistry, the coaching staff, the organization, and get a feel for it, you know, full on. I actually have a good feel for it now, but it's a lot different when you're not playing. So yes, my goal is to get as soon as possible. Obviously I can't get out there next month. I am a little over 5 months now. And like you said, it takes about, they say 10 to 12 months, but you know, my goal is a little bit before that. We're on a really good pace. I like where I'm at. But speaking of, like you said, the athleticism, you know, we talk about athleticism, given the fact that I'm one of those guys that doesn't need to be very athletic and my game is not built off athleticism. I don't need to, you know, I guess, worry about. I mean, I still, you know, they worry about re-tears, this and that. You want to prevent that. But because of the fact that I'm not, I mean, I may try to block a shot or two or get some rebounds. Because I'm not playing above the rim a bunch and running a million miles an hour with the ball, I'm a corner-to-corner guy, baseline-to-baseline type of guy. Just make sure I get my lateral quickness back. I think it's easier for me, or, you know, I'm able to get back to myself a little bit quicker than the guys that are jumping 40 inches in the air and that are more athletic. But, yeah, still, I said my game is very simple, and I think I can get there even before feeling like myself. I want to be feeling like myself, but I know that, you know, my game is something that I don't have to be 100% to be able to explode to play. As long as I can run and as long as I can slide. Yeah. You know, because I'm not crashing the offensive boards anymore, thanks to Joel. And, you know, I'm staying clear of that. And defense boards, yeah, I'll box guys out, let other guys, but I don't have to jump as much or block. I'm not, you know, taking risks as blocking any shots anymore. So it should be a pretty good adjustment. It shouldn't be that as hard of a transition or of when I'm ready, when my leg is ready and strong enough to be able to you know, play my game. Because I don't say I'm not doing what Ja does, jumping 40 inches and hang time and climbing people's chest. So, yeah, I'm excited about it, but we're in a good, really good spot without giving up too much information.
I think the other thing that's going in your favor, too, is just where you landed, right? Like, this team, one, young, a lot of young legs. Two, you know, there's good depth there on the perimeter. Like, you've had a career where, for years, whoever the best perimeter player is on the other team, like, you're often having to check that guy. You don't, you know, you could come back and not have all the burden fall on you, or like be out there and on day one be like, go get LeBron, get Dame, go get who, like, you know, right? Like, you can kind of ease your way back in a little
for
bit
sure
on this team.
And that was kind of the plus when I was in Philly, when Ben played with us. You know, we had Ben and Matisse. We had other multiple defenders that can guard, that took the weight off of all of us, not just me. But, you know, if Ben needed a break, if I needed a break, Matisse, you know, et cetera, just like here. So I got Dylan Brooks here. We have Zaire Williams. He's very good, a long athletic defender. We got younger kids. They're still up and coming, but we got Desmond. You know, we got a couple of guys that can guard on the wing position. And Ja, as a point guard, you know, we challenge him. I'm challenging him to try to make all defensive team. You know, he's athletic enough. He's good enough. He's quick enough to be able to block up and guard certain point guards. Like, not many other guys can do that, have the tools to do that. But he's a good defender as well. But we have set a pretty good foundation. We have great wings. We have great length. And when you got that and you got Jaren Jackson at the rim and Steve-O protecting the rim, it makes our job a lot easier. You know, Jaren led the league in block shots, I think, last year. So when you got a guy like that behind you, it makes it easier to play, you know, crawl up into guys and play defense.
I promise I won't belabor this beyond this one more quick note here. You are the oldest on this roster by a good measure.
By a long shot, yes.
You got 6 years on Steven Adams, who's second oldest, I think, if I've got this right.
Yeah, I think this is year 10 for him because he only did two years of college or something like that. So yeah,
I just did a quick basketball reference search or whatever, and, you know, clicked my birth date, and it just you went flying to the top and Adams was right below you. We in the media do this a lot, and you're part of the media, so you'll be doing this too.
Yes,
we talk about veteran wisdom and the importance of that and everything, and it almost becomes this like crutch or cliche for us. What do you think it actually means, Danny? Because you've been on both ends of this, right? Like, you come into the league in 2009, you're the guy trying to find your way. You probably had your vets that lead you. You know, you wake up one day and all of a sudden you're the vet.
Yeah,
I had this happen
fast.
on the writing side. Yes, it's a blur. So what does it mean to you that you are, when they bring you in and there were questions about whether, are they actually going to keep Danny Green? Are they going to retrade you? I think your contract had a clause where it was only, I think you might've had a partial guarantee. So there was a possibility of being cut. Like, it wasn't clear, but they want to keep you because, as you noted, you're not playing, but there, you have value to this team even before you spend a single minute in the rotation. So define that for me in terms of what the coaching staff has asked of you, what Zach Klein in the front office has asked of you, what the young guys are asking of you.
Zach's been amazing. So has Taylor. But it means the world to me that they believe in that and they believe in me. And the fact that they give me an opportunity to come back, they believe that, you know, I'm work hard enough to put myself in position to be able to help this team. But even if I wasn't, they thought that I'm valuable enough, that my IQ, my mind and maturity and what I've known is valuable enough to help this team mature, which, so it means a ton to me. You know what I'm saying? I can't even describe in words, but Zach has a great thing going. He's been amazing. Tails had a great thing. And that's my job right now, is to try to, you know, leave a good impression, or to help these guys mature and understand what it takes to win. Obviously, they have some time. It's still early in the season. There's a lot of time left. And they have a lot of room for growth, which I love. They have the right approach. They have the right attitude. It's a perfect atmosphere for it. But yeah, this environment, this atmosphere, and what they brought me in to do, I said, it means the world to me. And it means, you know, I don't see myself in that light. But it's crazy, is that, as you see, look at the roster. I didn't realize how young they were. Last year, I think they were the second youngest team behind OKC. And they might have gotten younger when we lost Kyle Anderson. I don't know. And even the staff is young. So I'm in the league long
enough.
You're
older than the GM, by the way.
I'm older than most of the staff, and you know, so the medical staff, coaching staff. So, and we're all learning from each other, which is a lot of fun for me, which is different. But because I've been in the league so long, like all the injuries that I've experienced, all the things that I've seen, you know, I'm kind of part of the staff too. Like I can help diagnose something, or I can say, oh, you know, get this or do that. Or even with the GM, we have different types of dialogue of and me learning from them and them learning from me, which is an interesting aspect. I've never been put in that position. You know, I've looked at it as a leader on the court of, you know, help these young guys, you know, push them to understand, you know, in Toronto, they were younger. In Philly, they were younger. But I've never been put in the aspect of where like things come across my desk to ask me my opinion. What can we do to help? What have you seen that can make this better? What have you seen that could do this or help with this person? So it's a different type of role. It's very interesting. It's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it. And it's a great responsibility to have. I'm you know, very humbled to be able to be put in this position and then for them to look at me in this light of somebody that actually can help them, even though I'm not on the floor.
Is it harder though when you're not playing? Because I've heard this from guys over the years that, you know, when you're on the shelf, when you're rehabbing, whatever, like it's easier to lead when you're on the court and connect. It's not just that it's in real time, but it's like you're contributing. And when you're kind of on the outside, sometimes I've heard from guys, it can be a little bit awkward trying to say, hey, you know, you blew this assignment or whatever, you should have done this. Like having that limitation where it's okay,
for
you can
sure
be in huddles. Yeah. So how do you bridge that gap when you're not on the court?
It's 100% difficult in all aspects, but it also depends on the group that you're with. And like I said, I've been blessed enough to be able to be put in a great situation, not just because of the team that is winning and a great organization, head coach, but a group of guys, young kids that are actually willing to learn and that respect me. So if they don't respect you, they're not going to really listen to you. But the fact that they do respect me, it makes it a lot easier. And they know that I've been in situations actually. And also it's about my approach. You know, I'm not approaching them like, I just met these guys and I just started learning. I'm not approaching them like I'm their dad or their coach. I'm approaching them like a new friend. So like, yeah, I've seen this. Maybe you could try this or do this with this guy, you know, and a lot of them, they understand, they know that they respect me. They take it in good stride and they wanted to learn. They're asking questions. They want to know what I know, what I've been through, what I've seen and how to guard certain situations, how to, you know, defend this or how to approach this or how to attack this on offense. So yeah, it definitely can be tough depending on the group that you're working with and the scenario. And from another standpoint, it's tough for me to be able to just watch and not be able to play. Like it's hard on that aspect, you know, just go watch and, you know, I'm getting antsy, but you know, I'm taking my time being patient and it's fun though. These young kids, they have a lot of fun. They're doing well. We won a couple good games. I know there's some things we need to get better at defensively and that's where I come in to try to help them and mature, but it can be frustrating from all aspects, but I think which makes it easy is that the coaching staff, the front office and the players, they all respect my opinion and what I have to say when I do say it. And I'm not always trying to say something all the time. You know, I chime in when I need to, when I feel it's necessary, and I try to give them my input and my opinion. And a lot of them, they ask questions and they look and then they really take it in.
I mean, it seems like a high character group, which I'm sure certainly helps. You also have 3 championship rings, which I'm sure certainly helps in terms of your gravitas, right?
So that might help a little bit. It helps a little bit, you know, for them to respect me. But yeah, they're great kids.
There's the specific stuff that might happen in the heat of a game or a practice or whatever. You might point something out to a guy that's very specific to the X's and O's or positioning or whatever. But I mean, more broadly in terms of advice, tell me something that you feel like you hear yourself or find yourself constantly telling the youngest players who are only in the league for a couple of years and are still trying to find their way, figure out what the league is about. What are your go-to bullet points?
Man, it's crazy that it happened so fast, but I catch myself feeling like, and I kind of put myself in Timmy, Tony, and Manu's shoes because I was a young one for them. And I'm like, damn, now I'm looking at him. I don't know how they did 20 years. Like they've done so long. They played for so long. But I remember some of the things, how they acted. And now I see why they didn't get too excited about things, or why they didn't harp on things, or why they didn't, you know, it's a loss. You know, young kids, it's like one loss. You think about it so much. You're watching so much film. You're in tune. Over the years, that kind of fades. You kind of know your personnel. You kind of know what shots you took. You watch some film what's needed. You don't harp on too many things. You don't get too excited about one player, one game. Because it's 82, you got to play a bunch of them, and in playoffs. And a lot of times, you know, regular season doesn't mean anything half the time. It wouldn't say anything, but it's not as important. Like, you winning regular season games or beating a certain team in a regular season does not mean you're better than them or you're champions. So I find myself, one, encouraging and continue to push them to be confident, because that's a big thing in our league, excuse me. And that can change, make or break a player. And you know, other night, you know, David Roddy shooting, he missed a couple shots. You know, Jake Laravia, although those guys are younger, they're really good players, but can shoot. But if they miss one or two, you can see they're kind of, and even John Concher, I'm like, you know, keep shooting, because we're going to need it. I don't care if you go, you know, 0-for-9, that 1-for-10 might be the basket that'll change the curve for us in the fourth quarter. And you don't go 1-for-10 if you stop shooting. So, you know, I continue to push the confidence. I continue to keep, you know, stick with it, and, you know, you know, in San Antonio, I like to say pound the rock, but, you know, just keep at it. And, you know, just don't get too high, get too low, you know, just stay the course, and things will turn out just fine. You know?
What's your best advice to Dylan Brooks, who seems like he's like, he's got a kind of a makeup in terms of his overall game that is a little bit like yours, but he's got a certain like edge to him that I think was a little bit evil, not like you. So
that's the evil twin. I don't know if you heard that or not.
I've heard that. I saw that on Twitter the other day. They're calling him Evil Danny Green.
Yeah, they ran that around a couple of years ago. So it's funny, it come full circle, actually, teammates, and he's actually a really good kid. He is edgy. He does have emotions. And I don't want to take that away from him, because that's what makes him who he is. It makes him very passionate about the game, and it brings a lot of energy to us. Sometimes it may take him into, you know, he might get into foul trouble. It might take him into, you know, get into a little debate with one of the coaches or a player. My job is to just let him see the bigger picture, and to let him have his emotions, but to reel it in when it's deemed necessary. Like, all right, you know, right here, okay, pick your battles. You don't need to argue the ref for this or this and that. Just say, okay, and keep it moving, or this, that, another, you know, just, and, you know, it's all right. There's a lot of game left. Don't get too emotional about this one situation. You know, don't think about it too much. That's just him. But he's a good kid, great player, and great emotions, that it brings a lot to the table with his emotions. I'm just trying to get him to learn to control them, which he's done. Said as he got older, he's got more choice controlling them, but I'm just trying to get him to learn to even more. So to where, cause he and a couple others can be the X factor for us in winning and being a successful group and winning a championship. I think him and Jaren have to be the guys that, you know, be the X factors for us.
I love the boldness of Dylan Brooks kind of getting into a jawing match with Kevin Durant. I kind of question maybe the wisdom of getting into a jawing match with Kevin Durant, not for the jawing part of it, but like, I don't think Kevin Durant's the guy you want to get fired up in the midst of a tight game.
Don't want to poke the bear, but I mean, I think he knows what he's doing. And, he's been around this league long enough to know who, and I think I don't think he's like really talking a lot of trash, but he's just letting him know, I'm here. You know, I'm not going anywhere, and I'm going to be annoying as much as possible. I'm going to use all my five fouls, and he may not be talking trash to him like Kevin. He's not saying Kevin's garbage or he can't score on him. He's just saying, I'm going to be here. I'm going to be fighting all day. You have to work for everything you get. And I'm sure Kevin respects that. But yeah, you don't want to poke the bear. And I think he's found the last couple of years of, you know, picking and choosing his spots of where to poke and where not to poke, you know, and who to mess with and get under the skin.
He reminds me a little bit of Rick Fox, who I covered back in my Laker beat days, right? Like somebody like Rick Fox, nicest guy in the world off the court, really thoughtful person, everything else. But like, he was just going to annoy the shit out of everybody. And he was physical. And another guy, you know, kind of 3-and-D for that time. I don't think 3-and-D was a phrase during that period, but kind of that makeup, right? And just, got under people's skin a lot. Got to share a tease, you know.
For sure.
Little scrap here and there. Nothing too serious, though.
No, that's a very good comparison, actually. But as I said, we just want to be wise with choosing how he uses his fouls and his scrappiness. But he's going to be a big, you know, player for us. He's a key piece.
How ready do you think this Grizzlies team is to make that next leap, Danny? Like, they made a leap none of us saw coming last year already. And so then, on the one hand, it's impressive. And on the other hand, you sit back and you go, wow, was this like... You know, they look like they're ahead of schedule. Is there going to be a regression a little bit where, you know, the league catches up a little, you know, they're winning a lot on just playing hard and just, you know, just outplaying teams, especially in the dog days. Does that come back around? We think of teams having to take their lumps in this league, right? You get to the playoffs, you lose. You get to the playoffs, you make another round, you lose, whatever. And so we're used to kind of this idea that like young teams can't win at a high level, but sometimes somebody jumps up and surprises us. Like, what's your best gauge, having been there for a few months, of where the Grizzlies are kind of in that learning curve?
I think they have the right attitude and the right atmosphere for it, but it's still going to take a lot of time and a lot of maturing. But it's too early for me to tell. I think that, can they do it? Is it possible? For sure. I said they made a big jump last year. There's no reason why they can't make another big jump. There is a lot of talent around the league. There is tough in the West, but they prove themselves more and more capable. It's a little different for them now. They have the target on their backs this year. We have a target on our chest. Last year, you know, they were up and coming teams. So now people know that they're good. They looked at one of the top teams, contenders in the league. Now everybody's out to get you. Everybody's trying to give you their best shot and beat you, see how well you can handle it. So outplaying teams is something that they're going to have to, instead of playing harder, that's something that we could try to keep. And also, we got to keep that chip on our shoulder. So we'll see how mature they are throughout the years. It's only 4 games in right now. I can give you a better synopsis in January, February. And we'll see where our growth has taken us. But I think they definitely have the right approach, the right attitude and mentality to make that leap.
You mentioned some of your former teammates, Timmy, Manu, Tony. Those guys just need one name. We don't need the last names for them.
Yeah. Prince.
Exactly. You've kind of got a little bit of the Forrest Gump kind of career, right? Where you've intersected with all these major figures, right? So yeah. I was looking at this. So 2009, you come in, you played with LeBron and Shaq during that weird period when Shaq was with the Cavs. Yeah. You go to the Spurs, you've got Duncan, Parker, Ginobili, and then eventually Kawhi. You and Kawhi get traded to Toronto, of course. You're with the Lakers, LeBron again, Anthony Davis, Dwight Howard, Philly with Harden and Embiid, and Dwight again. I'm curious, like, do your younger teammates ask about any of these guys? Like, LeBron is still playing, of course, and some of the guys are still playing, but who do you get the most questions about?
I think they ask about everybody. They just ask about the locker room, how certain people's names come up. It could be from when I was in Cleveland when I played with Delonte West. It could be playing in LA with Rondo, you know, and certain guys, when we play throughout the league, some of those guys are still around. Some of those guys we've seen speak about, and they're like, oh, you play with, how was he? How was DeMarcus Cousins, or how was so-and-so? You know, I play with so many different guys throughout my years. I've been very lucky. How was James? And you know, a lot of them ask because they just want to know how they were as a person. And some of them might not like certain guys. Some of them may really like certain guys. They want to know how they really are. And of course, this is a young team. They like to, they have their swag. They have their chip on their shoulder, and they talk a little trash out there. So I'm sure they got into some verbal debates, as you've seen Dylan Brooks, John. They have some verbal debates with other teams. And I'm sure that that's their only glimpse of what they really are. So they're like, we play the Lakers, LeBron really started talking trash, talking some shit to us. So like, what is he really like? They'll ask that. But they know how certain it is. When you're between the lines, all is fair. After, you can be friends after. So, they ask about a little bit about everybody. They ask about Joel. They ask about Ben, of course. They ask a different situation, James. And they ask about Bron, of course, Kawhi. Those guys all get the same fair share of questions of, what their personality is like, how do they operate, how things were done. And they even San Antonio, some of the guys are from Texas and from the South. How was, Timmy, Tony Mountain? How was Pop? They asked about a lot of coaching staff too, comparing it to Taylor. And I'm like, you guys have it really good here, so enjoy it and don't leave, And they asked about certain cities. In Tennessee, you got I think there's no state tax here, so you get more money. Like, if you can, you might want to stay here. It's a good spot to be in. So they ask a lot of great questions. They're a very high IQ young group and have matured for their age. I don't realize how young they are until they tell me, because they seem a lot older because of how much smarter in life they've been through.
All right, that same group of names, keeping in mind that I just read off, it's now 15 years from now, 20 years from now, whatever, and it's your kids. Who's the one you're telling the most stories about, I had this teammate and you wouldn't believe, who are you telling the most stories about? Who made the biggest impression in that regard?
Well, hopefully my kids are smarter than me and have some IQ, and the stories I share with them, it doesn't go viral on TikTok or who knows what the next social media will be. I'll probably leave out names, but there's a lot of guys I have stories of of what to do, how I did it the right way, and of what not to do, you know, and all those names are on the part of spectrum. Obviously, Timmy, Tony, Manu, Bron, Kawhi, those guys are, you know, great people, great examples to choose from. There's some other guys who say, you know what, this guy was really good, but he was so talented, he didn't have to do some of these things. And there's some guys that are really good that kind of ruined their careers by doing these things. So there's a bunch of guys that I can tell stories about. And some of them are role players. Some of them are star players. But I'll tell my fair share of stories about each one of them, because I'm sure there'll be life lessons when it comes, when my kids making mistakes, that every one of those stories can give them an example of what to do and what not to do and how to grow up and how other people, even professionals, have been through it.
I'm just going to guess that the most family unfriendly, least principal stories you're going to involve Shaquille. That's just going to be my guess. You don't have to.
Yeah, those are
going to
be the strange ones. Those are going to be the funny, strange ones.
You got to wait till they're grown up for that.
Yeah, he has a different type of way of going about things. So wait till they're old enough to understand his type of humor and jokes and how he operates. So yeah, that'll be a different age bracket for them. That's mature. I think, you know, you go watch a movie, was MA or something like that?
Yeah, there you go. NC-17 or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Shaq for sure.
Yeah, superstar in the making next to you in Ja Morant.
Yeah.
It's only a short time with this team so far, you know, a preseason, a few games, and we're just a week into the season as you and I taped this. What's the first thing that's leapt out, no pun intended with the leaping, about Ja not involving his athleticism? Like, what has struck you about your time around him?
Well, his athleticism is not something you ever get used to seeing, because he's such a small guy, but it's explosive, and it's uncanny how easy he makes it look. But his IQ, you know, I was really shocked about his IQ and understanding of the game, and also how coachable he is. You know, obviously people have some stories about him, this and the other, how he has a bunch of this going on, that going on. And you see by social media, Twitter, this and that, they're always on him. And, you know, he's gotten some heat for some of the things he's tweeted or said. But he's a good kid. He has a high IQ, and he's very humble and a coachable kid, which most of these guys are. And I think that, you know, is a formula for success. If you can have your star players be able to be coached, it's easy for everybody else to kind of fall in line and see the bigger picture and play within the team and give themselves up for the team when you see your star player doing that. So yes, he's a star in the making. He's already a superstar in my eyes. But I'm trying to get, you know, Jaren Jackson there, Desmond Bane, those guys have to be, they're very coachable, but they're up and coming superstars. And then we get them on the right pace, on the right, you know, route, the right. I think they're in a good direction right now, but I think they can make this organization and the city very special.
Yeah, no, there's something really good brewing there. Like, shout out to that, you know, the franchise, the front office, Zach and his mm-hmm. whole group. Like, they just drafted really smartly. Like I was watching Santi Aldana the other night, and I'm like, that guy was taken 30th in the draft, and he's just like smooth as heck. And, you know, this is against the Nets. I'm watching that game, and he just looks like he's just absolutely comfortable drilling shots, going toe to toe with vets. Like, they're doing a really nice job there. And if they get, yeah, you know, it's a small market. Keeping a team together is tough, but, you know,
high potential, very good guys. And I like Jake. I like D-Rod. But Santi is 6'10", 6'11", 7 foot, you know, shooting big that can do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And he reminds me of, you know, obviously he's from Spain, so anybody can compare him to. It's just tough. This is a tough comparison. And this is still a long ways to go, but he's a very much like a pal in this generation. You know, he's more of a perimeter pal Gasol. You know what I'm saying? You know, came in very light, you know, kind of flimsy, didn't know his body well. Obviously, Powell grew into, I mean, Powell was very good from pretty much the start, but it took him a while to, you know, figure out, you know, this league and his body. And obviously, Powell's a champion multiple times over and has thousands and thousands of points. But he has that type of touch. He can shoot it very well from three. He can, you know, make moves. You know, Powell can make moves. Powell obviously was more of a back-to-basket guy. Santi doesn't do that or have it yet, because this league is really not that much back to the basket anymore. Yeah. But I think he's capable if he were to. But, you know, he's just got to find that grit and that edge a little bit. But he has the tools and the potential. You know, they said my comparison is like a watered down, you know, Pau Gasol. a very, very watered down Pau Gasol. Santi's very good. But
potential
Powell
to get there.
Yes, a lot of potential to get there.
All right, let me just ask you to put on your NBA analyst hat for a few minutes here.
For sure.
You guys saw the Nets this week, which means you got to see your old teammate Ben Simmons. It is early yet. He's been off for a year and a half. He's never played with these guys before. He's had back surgery. There's a lot. But the early returns, you know, you don't want to overreact, but that's all we do in this league. All we do in the media with this league is overreact everything.
Wouldn't be you guys if you didn't, right?
I know. But Ben Simmons does not look that assertive at the moment. And that, of course, has raised some early flags about, you know, just where he's at, whether it's physically, mentally, both, because those were both concerns, obviously, over the last year and a half. And I don't say that lightly. Like, those were serious things that kept him out of the game. What did you see when you got to see him up close the other night?
Well, he said hello. We spoke, and I spoke to him about a month ago briefly. I saw him in New York as well. Patty's my guy is there, so the two Australians said hello, spoke, chopped it up, just said what's up. But he looks like he's doing better mentally, doing well. I think he's still trying to figure out where he fits there. You know, it's a lot different for him. He does bring the ball up, but the ball is really not in his hands as much as it was in Philly. And that's an adjustment. So he brings it up sometimes, sets up plays, but he's really going to the dunker a lot. But I do think the back is affecting him, or has affected him, to where I don't think he's 100% himself yet. And you could tell he doesn't have his speed, his explosiveness, or his lift like he used to, because I think his back is – he's still, you know, I guess, building it up. I think he's still strengthening it. But I think it's going to take some time of not just that healing and getting back right, but I also think of – him taking time of getting a fit with Kyrie and KD. It's not easy. So when you take the ball of a guy who has the ball in his hands 90% of the time, he's in Philly, to, you know, take him playing like a post guy, it's a lot different type of aspect and type of game for him to play. So he has to make a lot of adjustments with doing that. But defensively, I said even that, defensively, he's still very solid, but it's going to take some time. So I thought he played less minutes, but for the minutes he was in there, I thought he looked decently okay. But you could tell he's still, you know, favoring something.
Yeah. Well, and it is different too, right? Like, he played with another dominant offensive player in Joel Embiid, but Joel does not bring the ball up. Joel is not initiating the offense, right?
He's and there not were no in pick other, and rolls. Yeah.
Yeah. There was really nobody to have to, like, share that responsibility with. And playing with two dominant perimeter players like Kyrie and KD, like, that's a whole different thing. And you throw on top of that rust and being off that long and recovering from the back. And I mean, it's a lot, but I mean, I think it's fair though, to at least raise the concern early on, like, okay, he's not looking to score at all. And for a guy who wasn't looking to score much even before, he's definitely not looking to score now. He's barely shooting. He's definitely looking to get rid of the ball pretty quickly, but maybe that's just all part of the feeling out process.
For sure. And I said, I could be wrong. He may have nothing wrong with his back, but I assume that it seems like he's favoring something. But I said, also it's his personality. He's not like an aggressive personality to where I'm going to take this over. This is my game. This is my team. It's more so, how do I, you know, he's more a submissive, passive type of guy of, you know, because he's a point guard. He's a natural point guard, you know, and say people pleaser, but, you know, teammate, he's going to try to make sure these guys get fed, get the ball where they want, and then figure it out from there. Then he'll pick and choose a spot. So it's a lot comes into play when it comes to that, you know, situation, and for them to figure out that formula.
I know this is almost, it feels like ancient history already now, but I'll ask you anyway, if you don't mind, but like, have we made too much out of the last game against the Hawks, the passing up the shot, dumping it off? I mean, it feels like that is still sitting there in the background, kind of haunting him. When we see him being what is perceived as passive, it's the first thing everybody goes to is, oh yeah, well, you know, he passed up that dunk when he, you know, dumped the ball off in a, you know, critical moment of a playoff game. Like, that's kind of hanging there. You were in the midst of that. So what's your feel of how we've talked about that?
It was one play. I think it got overhyped and overplayed and still does. I also think because of the way he handled the situation, that's probably why it keeps coming up. And it was almost, you know, it's a year and a half, 2 years ago. At this point, about a year and a half ago, since that happened, he's a lot older, a lot more mature, you know, different type of player, different type of person. But it's just one play. Like I said, one play doesn't dictate the outcome of games. It can change games. It can change. It doesn't dictate what kind of person or player somebody is. So I didn't harp on it too much, but I said a lot of that is because, you know, the following year he didn't get a chance to really, he didn't really take the opportunity to redeem himself or to show, you know, who he was or who he could be and who he had been before that. He said it was a rough, tough series and it was tough for him. And I think that game was a tough one for him as well, but So I think the media and everybody else, obviously, they still harp on that one play because it was a defining moment, I guess, to, you know, quote unquote, for him. But, you know, I don't know if that's still, I don't think he thinks about it anymore, relays in his mind. I think he's far past, and I think everybody else has, for, I wouldn't say forgotten about it, but Philly is well far removed from that. He's far removed from that. It was a playoff series we lost. Yeah. And, you know, he's doing his own thing in Brooklyn and Philly's doing their own thing. And we all move forward, you know. One play, there's a lot of plays that people have had in the past and in the future that don't define them, but have been tough, you know, situations.
I think you brought up a really smart point, though, Danny, which is that it's not just that it happened. It's that it happened and then what followed, right? What followed was, you know, some criticism internally, obviously a lot of criticism externally, and then deciding I'm not playing for this team again. And then all the drama that followed and eventually a trade. And so instead of it being a moment that's then followed up by in a normal course of action, right? Maybe a few months later, you come to camp, you talk about it once more, then you start playing preseason games. And if you're still with that team, you start playing and everybody just starts focusing on the new season and where things are headed. But instead we had a year and a half of no Ben Simmons. And so it's still like, oh, this is the last thing that happened to him before all this other drama and a trade demand and all that and this rift. And, you know, like it's all of that just kind of, I think, inflated that moment even more in our consciousness, made it, you know, kind of a flashpoint for the entire Ben Simmons discussion, the breakup with the Sixers, all of that. Right. So it just, it's the context and the combination of events. So I think you're right. Like that's, you know,
yeah, that's why it sits in people's minds. It's the last thing they remember, I guess.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, a lot of people at home are professional analysts or professionals in their past life.
They're also professional doctors. They're also all lawyers. On Twitter, everybody is a professional, everything. It's incredible. They've all got advanced degrees. It's amazing.
They know the game. They play the game at some point, you know, so they know exactly what's going on, what happened, what he should have done, what could have been. And, you know, if you're not doing what they would have done, you know, you're soft or you're not this or you're that. And they have something to say. Yeah. So, you know, if you give people more reasons to be negative, people just can't wait to talk trash about somebody that's great or somebody that's special.
Yeah.
If you give them reason to and you give them more reason to, they just can't wait to just, you know, pile it on. You just, you know, and once he made the play and didn't decided not to play, it just gave them more fuel to be like, oh, we could talk more trash about Ben. So.
Couple more before I let you go here. Looking back on other stops, I'm trying to decide if I was going to ask this the mean way or the diplomatic way. You're part of a Lakers championship team that immediately had the roster dismantled and a bunch of shooters replaced by non-shooters, and here they are still struggling a couple of years later. I'll ask it the diplomatic way. What have you thought of just like everything that's happened there since you got, like, you were sent out for in the Schroeder trade. There was a lot, but a lot of the different stuff has happened. A couple of off seasons have gone by, but they had a formula, LeBron plus shooters, which has kind of historically worked. And you were part of that shooters part of it and the defense, of course. Any thoughts from afar? Are you curious, or do you still feel like a little bit of an investment? Like when you've been with the team and especially won a championship with the team, it's been a couple of years, but are you still looking back going like, wow, you know, what the hell happened?
I mean, we know what happened. I watched it. I think it's interesting. All the teams that I've played for, you try to see what kind of moves they make, what direction they're going in. And yeah, you have some, especially if you win a championship there, you have some type of, it's home. You know, you have some type of invested feeling toward that city, toward that group, toward that, you know, some of the players that are still there in the organization. So yeah, I mean, we know what happened. Things have changed. They have Dennis back now for cheaper, and I thought he was a good fit for them. I thought there was a lot of good pieces that were good fits for them that they let go or traded away, and you know, they thought they had a better fit. And I think, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, you know, what you need around LeBron and AD. But I'm sure they tried to get those pieces, but it's hard, and it's hard because you have so much money in the front end when it comes to those three and Russ. It's hard to find, you know, good quality 3-and-D guys when you have a big part of the cap already taken up and you traded away some of them for, you know, for Russ and for other people. And I think they're all great players. I just don't think they fit. I think Russ is a great addition to any team. I just don't think He fits with Bron and AD like that, and a lot of the other guys there. I just don't think that's a good formula. Maybe, and I thought I was wrong, but that's when we watch the games to see if it works. And interesting to see the last couple of years. I think majority of the people that guessed probably guessed right that it wasn't going to be a good fit, and now it's unfolding. You know, you take gamble. You take gamble when you make trades. You take gamble when you sign players for long term deals or commit to them. To see how it works. And, you know, they took a gamble, and it's still early in the season. They can turn it around. I think they have some good pieces. And I feel for Russ that they're putting everything on him. He's at home. And, you know, his home fans, his people there are giving him a lot, man. And it's not his fault they're losing. You know, it's not, by any means, it's not one player. So it's a tough situation. But, you know, and I've realized when I was there, you know, I played. I had rough, you know, had rough patches. I had rough shooting slumps or season, or whatever. We still won. Luckily, unfortunately, I've been blessed. But it goes to show that. And Russ to me is one of the most confident guys in our league. But it goes to show that city and those bright lights can kind of get to anybody. You know, yeah. And you see him going through it. And said, which I feel for him. So it's a tough place to play. It's a tough place to be under that microscope and playing alongside those guys. And you know, is that every team that I've played for, I always wish them the best, especially the guys that I play with. I always want to see AD stay healthy and play well. He's been dealt a tough hand when it comes to that with injuries in his body. But yeah, is that I watch it all. I'm fully invested, but it's interesting to see. And, you know, it's always interesting to hear from fans after the fact. Now, you know, some hit you or they appreciate you more. They say, we would love to have you back. And yeah, that's cool and all, but you know, that happens all the time with most situations. You don't appreciate something until it's gone. I think when they let go of AC and KCP and Kuz, I think that changed a lot.
Yeah.
Because that was a lot of their defense. Obviously I helped defensively as well and shooting. But you know, I was one piece that was traded for Schroeder, who was a good, you know, point guard, and you're trying to take the ball out of Bron's hands for a little bit to give him a rest, which as long as Bron's playing, he's not going to take many less minutes or take the ball out of his hands much more. He's going to be LeBron. But I thought he was a good piece for them too. You know, I thought it was a good trade for them when they got Dennis. But when you gave up a lot of your defense to get Russ and whoever else I think they picked up, I think that hurt them a lot. And Ace, you need some more glue guys. You know, it's good to have superstars. And it looks good on paper, but you need a guy like Alex Caruso. You need a guy like Kuz or, you know, KCP. You know, some of those guys are the glue guys. And quiet is kept, even the guys that were on the bench that were impactful. You know, Jared Dudley, who's a coach now. You know, those guys, you need that type of, you know, around you, keep the atmosphere and keep it cohesive. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been interesting to watch.
Chemistry is a delicate thing in this league. That among the things I've learned over my many years covering it, it's sometimes so like in that case, it was a bunch of stuff, but sometimes it's one player. Sometimes it's one little thread you pull and it's a completely different field the next season. It's a strange thing, but it's true. And it's the one thing you can't really quantify, right?
Yeah. I mean, egos are a thing, man, and it's hard to manage them. Keep under control with the coaching staff. You got to kind of have players kind of police themselves a little bit too. Yeah. And if you don't have the right guys, the right glue guys, but we'll keep, you know, certain guys on the same page and seeing the bigger picture, one guy could, I wouldn't say ruin it, but it can change and it can affect, I wouldn't say distract, but it can be something that will cause you to not, you know, be where you're supposed to be or succeed. You know, this small detail. I'm not saying that their ego will get in the way, but if they're not on the same page or if they're not, you know, buying in, and they may be great kids, may be a great player. They may give some additional – they may be a huge plus when they play. But if they're not fully invested and not a part of the big picture, that can be detrimental to you winning a championship or, you know, having your team success.
See, and this is why you need veteran wisdom and consummate glue guys like Danny Green on your team. There's the lesson.
I like to think so. I'm just trying to be that and continue to be that and for this group and do my job. So that's my job now. And hopefully – it'll help us, you know, be successful.
Well, I hope to see you back on the court doing your thing soon. Hope to see you on one of these road trips when you guys are coming through New York. I haven't checked the schedule, but I assume that's sometime not too far in the future here.
Yeah,
but
late November. So I'll be there in about a month. Yeah, two back-to-back weekends, actually. So we got
excellent.
Last two weekends in November. But yeah, I can't wait. Hopefully I'll see you on the court too, man. I hope to be on the court next time I see you. But I appreciate that. And thank you, man. I'm going to need all the luck possible.
No, thank you, man. It's great seeing you. Great chatting with you. Appreciate you coming on, and we will see you soon.
For sure, man. Same.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Danny Green. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.